Bruins wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Monday evening. We start with the final Winnipeg Jets home game of the season. That, of course, last night's 5-1 victory on home ice against the Minnesota Wild. The Jets head out for 3 on the road to wrap up the year as they head to sunny California to play the Ducks tomorrow evening, the Sharks on Thursday, and then the Los Angeles Kings next Saturday night. Of course, all games available here on TSN 1290. We look back at last night, boys. Let's start with that. Obviously, you know, disappointing season for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school with that comment. But for the fans that were in attendance, a nice way to wrap up the season with a dominant 5-1 victory over the playoff-bound Minnesota Wild. And it sort of probably leaves a lot of the fans saying, well, where was this effort and where was this performance all season long as you struggled through, you know, more downs than ups in the course of the 2015-16 regular season NHL schedule?
Yeah, it was a dominating performance by the Winnipeg Jets, and it was really nice to see guys like Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorber not only score, but score highlight reel goals. Mm-hmm. So it was great for the fans. You know, you saw the fans getting really into it, especially in the third period there. You saw the wave and all that. And, of course, Drew, it's been a disappointing season. The Jets haven't been in the playoff race for well over 2 months now, right? So it's really nice to see the Jets pick up 3 of 4 points in the last two games against two teams that are going to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I think you got to give the entire team credit. Andre Pavlik played really well, picked up a star. And I thought, again, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Nikolaj Ehlers was excellent as a unit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was really nice to see. The power play looked good. And the next three games here on the road, even though you're probably hoping that they don't get that many points because it just means that there's going to be a lower draft pick coming up in June, but you're still going to see these guys go out and give 110%, right? So it was a very impressive performance, and you know, I thought the Jets, you know, going into this homestand, you weren't really sure what you were going to expect. Chicago's coming in, and even though Chicago doesn't have a chance, Drew, at winning the Central Division, they're still trying to finish the season strong, and you saw the Chicago Blackhawks whoop the Boston Bruins on Sunday, so you know that they weren't happy with the way they played here in Winnipeg, even though they won. I think Chicago was pretty worried there that they were going to lose that game. If you remember, the Jets were in control there, and then skill takes over. Guys like Panarin and Kane score, and but yeah, it was a great performance, and you got to think that the last three games here, the Jets aren't going to go down quietly. We've seen a lot of teams around the league, guys, play the role of spoiler. So you're talking about Anaheim and LA right now fighting for that Pacific Division crown, and you know, the Jets might take some points away from one of those teams, and they might not be too happy about it. But again, I thought it was a good team effort, and you know, there's not much else to say. It was really for the fans, Richie. I mean, it doesn't mean much in the standings. The Jets are at 72 points. They're way out of the playoff picture. It's nice for the fans to walk out of the MTS Center last night with something to cheer about, as opposed to just saying, oh, ho-hum, you know, we lost another one. You know, we can't wait for the draft lottery coming up here. Because right now, that's what most Jets fans have circled on their calendars, right? They want to know where this team is going to draft, because it's most likely going to be a top-5 pick. So you know, that's all I take out of last night's game. And I also take out of it that it was a good team effort. And I like that these guys are still battling for each other. You know, great performance by the fourth line, Lowry, Halaschuk, and Thorburn. I thought it was an overall great team effort. And again, more so a victory for the fans, I think.
What I took from it is one of the better games they've played in a little while. I'd say full games, not a game that if you were at or watching that you thought they would blow the lead, which they have, or just not finish the deal. Played pretty well overall, I thought, as he talks about the fourth line. Really, the energy of all lines, I thought there wasn't a lot of let up, and I thought the fans were into it, probably because it was the last game of the season and the fan and the players were into it because it was the last home game of the season. The one thing that stood out to me is, you know, how are the Jets 15 points worse than the Wild? The Wild haven't had a good year. But I just look at those teams, and the Wild have a good team on paper, but they're not that much better than the Jets. And you just, and I realize the Jets have some injuries. But that's one thing I notice is when you watch, you see when playing an assertive game and playing with some defensive conscience and structure, that you become a more effective team.
Does that concern you more so than
the season's over, Drew?
I know the season's over. So, I mean, I'm just talking about, you know, looking at it. You know, I know the season's over. But, you know, the fact that the Jets, you know, are not 15 points worse than the Minnesota Wild on paper, mm-hmm. does it concern, and the talent disparity between the two teams is not a 15-point talent disparity. Mm-hmm. Does it concern you that, you know, more so than if the Jets just had a, you know, it just didn't have the talent to match up against a lot of these other teams?
That's fair. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you look at the teams that they're down with, Vancouver, Columbus, Toronto, and Edmonton, they're clearly the most talented top to bottom of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could certainly take issue with goaltending and certain other things, but when you get down to
special
it.
Special teams, whatever.
But
else.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, that's – I'm talking talent on the roster.
Sure.
When you get down to it, the teams that they are down there with, you know, 5 points behind Arizona – there are teams that they're significantly better than talent-wise. So, yeah, it's been a disappointing season for sure, because if you turn on the TV and you watch some of these other games, and I know they're pretty unwatchable, a lot of these games, but if you turn them on and watch them, I mean, the Jets are better than a lot of these squads. I mean, you watch a Toronto game, the Jets are far better than Toronto, and you watch an Oilers game, and the talent level in the Oilers, we know they have great talent up front, but the back end, like, night and day with the Jets. So, yeah, it's been a really disappointing season, and... you know, to think, you know, Minnesota's got 87 points, guys, so it's not going to be that hard to get in the Western Conference playoffs like some, including us, thought at the beginning of the season.
Well, last year it took, what, 99 points is what the Jets ended up with to make it this year. It's 12 points worse. It wasn't a huge hill to have to climb to make the Western Conference playoffs this year. The Jets obviously died at the foot of that hill, though.
Drew, I'm a lot more disappointed if I'm a Minnesota Wild fan. If the Minnesota Wild win last night, they clinch a playoff spot. If I'm a Minnesota Wild fan, well, forget fans for a second. If I'm John Torchetti and the coaching staff, I'm watching Matt Dumba get undressed by Andrew Kopp, and I'm not liking the way they played defensively or the way they responded when the Jets went up. This Minnesota Wild team, we talked about it on Saturday's show. This team has been hot and cold all year. The offense has been hot and cold. The defense, Devin Dubnyk just got a star of the week, so Devin Dubnyk is not the problem. I mean, he might not have as good of numbers as last year, but his numbers are still very solid when it comes to goals against and save percentage, uh-huh. top 15, you know, around in the league. So it's the defense, and, you know, you've brought in guys like Mike Riley, and I wasn't that impressed by Mike Riley. I know he's only played about 25 or so games in the NHL, but I thought he looked a little bit shaky in his own zone, and this is his first NHL season. But point being, you're going to probably go up against the Dallas Stars in the first round, and Tyler Seguin might not be completely healthy for the start of that series, but if I'm the Dallas Stars and I'm looking at that Minnesota Wild decor, it's like, you know, the way I look when there's a piece of steak on the table. So I think the Wild right now are kind of limping into the playoffs. I realize that they won six games in a row.
Well, the Wild,
but they had to win six games in a row or they weren't going to get into the playoffs.
The Wild, and we talked about the Wild a lot on Saturday, but, you know, the inconsistency of the Wild is actually incredible. Since Torchetti was hired, mm-hmm. so he was hired on February 14th. They win four in a row as soon as he's hired. Then they lose three in a row. Then they win four in a row. Then they lose two. Then they win one, lose one, two in a row. It's just win four, lose three. Win four, lose three. So then it is remarkable just how peaks and valleys the Minnesota Wild have been. And right now they're in a valley, as you saw, with losing their third straight game. But you're to your point, Ezzy. You're right. I mean, they were embarrassed in a game where they could have clinched the playoffs. They could have made their last week of the regular season really just a rest week more than anything, and that's the effort they came out with.
Right, and the top players for the Minnesota Wild year after year have been Zach Parise and Mikko Koivu since Parise came over in 2012. And I look at guys like Jason Palmenville hasn't had a good year. Thomas Vanek has not had a good year. And I'm not just talking offensive numbers. I'm talking the way they've played overall, with Vanek being a healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. And Mikael Granlund and Nito Niederreiter have had up and down seasons. You know, they kind of expected those guys to take the next step. So there's a lot of question marks. And, you know, our predictions will come next week on the playoff preview show. But right now, I don't like the matchup whether it's Dallas or St. Louis for the Minnesota Wild. I just don't think they have enough depth, and you know the goaltending is just as good, if not better, especially when you're talking about some of the injuries that St. Louis is having there.
Sure. So, there's another couple guys today, and we'll talk about the playoffs upcoming. This road trip, obviously it starts in Anaheim tomorrow night. Are you looking for anything in particular? You know, it's easy to get up for that last game at home. You want to do something nice for your home crowd. You know, you want to salute them for the, you know, mm-hmm. the sticking through the team all season long. Are you looking to see anything in particular? You know, maybe keep an eye on if Brandon Tanev makes his debut, see what, you know, the fuss is all about surrounding him.
Sure. I mean, it's better than seeing the same old players, so you get something new. You'd like for there to be something on the line for Anaheim, San Jose, and L.A. when they're playing those teams. Otherwise, they're resting the guys, and you're really going to see a kind of a low quality of play.
Sure.
There should be. As compared to the following week. Well, you'd think so, but if San Jose, but they play San Jose on Thursday, if San Jose were to lose before,
yeah.
and both L.A. and Anaheim were to win, San Jose would be locked into their spot.
Right.
San Jose
would be locked into their spot. Yeah. So, but you expect that Anaheim and L.A. are going to continue to battle for the lead. You don't expect, I mean, certainly not by tomorrow will that be settled.
Right, right. No, of course. So, I mean, that it's a test to go up again. And, you know, if you're the Jets, you look back and say, this is a team we played in the playoffs last year. We'd like to put the screws to them as best we can. So it's stuff like that you work on. But, yeah, then maybe is there a tad of a letdown because it's not a home game, the last home game of the year? Maybe, Drew, that's possible. But how much do these games really matter? I mean, is there going to be anything that we see in these games that's going to tell us a lot about the players? Probably not.
Richie, they obviously don't matter as far as the Jets going to the playoffs. So your motivation is play spoiler mm-hmm. and finish the season strong, because you want to go into next season, you want to go into the off season with something positive to feel, right? So that's what you're playing for. So you want to finish strong, and it just sets yourself up better for next year, right?
Sure.
So you have to almost forget that the regular season games and almost pretend like it's the beginning of the season so you can motivate yourself. And I thought the Jets, again, did a great job with the last two home games, picking up 3 of 4 points against two Central Division opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope that they can maybe steal one of these games and you know, cause one of these teams to not finish as high in the standings. And, you know, like you said, it's an opportunity for some of the young players to make an impression, whether that's Brandon Tanev, one or two games, or, you know, a guy like Julian Melchiori
sure,
for
Brandon
next year.
Kitchen got called up today. Yeah, absolutely. You see one of the younger guys, you know, see if they can, in short window of opportunity, see what they can make with that window. You mentioned putting the screws to. I just want off topic completely. The fact that the Anaheim Ducks have to play Saturday night in Colorado
mm-hmm.
and then travel Sunday to Washington is and then travel back to the Pacific time zone for whenever their first playoff game is an incredible hardship, I find, that might not even be necessary. If that game is a meaningless game, your factor the NHL is still making them travel from the Mountain time zone to the Eastern time zone to the Pacific time zone.
Are you sure they're going to send any of their players if it's like if they're top guys?
Well, I mean, I don't know how many guys they have to send. Some players.
Well, they have to send players, but I mean, they're top guys. I mean,
I would think
that
not.
Game that Getzlaf and Kessler going to be playing in.
I would think not, but they're good. I mean, that's a lot of travel. So for the Ducks' perspective,
mm-hmm.
given
yeah,
the reward
saying.
They've had all year, I hope that they actually are the last team to start when the playoffs begin. They should start on Thursday or Friday. They should not be a team that starts when the playoffs begin on Wednesday.
There is a good chance that if Anaheim wins that game, they win the division, because right now they're only 1 point up on LA, and they've mm-hmm. played the same amount of games. So, Drew, that game could matter in the standings.
It could, but that's a lot of travel for an Anaheim Ducks team after an 82-game season in any event. That was neither here nor there, just something I noticed. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the news of the week, that being Steven Stamkos' injury and Pavel Datsyuk. Is he KHL bound? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarket.com. dentalcenter.com. And, of course, we have to give a shout-out and a happy birthday to Les Rikus.
Yes.
Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center, turning 29, I believe, today. So happy birthday out to our good buddy Les as he celebrates his birthday.
Didn't know he was 40 years younger than you, Drew.
Set you up for that one there, didn't I, Richie? Let's talk. Start with Steven Stamkos' injury. Obviously, you know, the news came out, I think it was Saturday night, that Steven Stamkos will be out 1 to 3 months as a result of a blood clot in his right arm. I mean, this is just stunning news for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Is there a way? Do you think that they can recover from this, or is this going to be their playoff downfall?
I don't know how they recover from this. The Tampa Bay Lightning have not had as good of a season as they had last year, and he's their top scorer. And even though Steven Stamkos probably doesn't have the offensive totals that you'd expect, I think he's around 61, 62 points. You'd expect him to be at least at 80 points, but he's still got 35 goals. He's still one of the top goal scorers in the NHL, right? So it's a horrible loss for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that just puts a lot of pressure on other players. And you're hearing out of Tampa Bay that they might call up Jonathan Drouin, even though he's injured right now and not playing for Syracuse. Not a serious injury, but, you know, do they call up Jonathan Drouin? They might have to. And, you know, we talked about it on Saturday's show, Richie. As far as I'm concerned, Washington is a step above all the other teams. And, you know, I'm Captain Obvious saying that, but it's true. I really think the Eastern Conference is weak this year. And it was weak last year. I thought the Western Conference was just as strong as it was this year. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, have injury problems with Anton Stralman already, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about your top-pairing defenseman with Victor Hedman out now. And then Steven Stamkos is out 1 to 3 months. And it's a horrible injury for him. It's been a tough year for Steven Stamkos. I know he's had to face the media and say that his pending UFA status hasn't been a distraction. I personally think it's been a huge distraction for that team. I don't know how it hasn't been a distraction with all of the coverage and the media.
They don't even have any real coverage. Like, it's like the same as Ladan Bufflin here. I mean, you tell you it's not a distraction, it's a distraction.
Sure.
These people are human, right? So the problem you have for Tampa is two things. One is that you have to match up against the other team's top line, and you're going to be easy to match up against now with Tyler Johnson being the clearest threat, his line being the clearest threat.
And he's had a lousy year.
Sure. I mean, but again, you're talking talent-wise. That's your threat. Then you're talking about Phil Pula as your second biggest matchup problem now. Huge difference from Stamkos, and I agree with you. As you know, he's struggled, but still so dangerous. So you have now your other team's top defensive pairing in the first round. So is that Detroit right now? So
right Detroit, now it's Detroit.
That's not the best shutdown D, but Detroit, you know, you're going to get your matchup against Detroit's top pairing. He's going to play against Tyler Johnson. I know they had a problem last year with him. He was very effective against them, but it makes it easier to defend. Then you look at the other way around. Now you have your top pairing of Hedman, and now he's playing with Schuster. Drop-off between Schuster and Stralman. So now you're defending against the other team's top line, and you're not as sturdy. So two huge matchup problems for them. Now they're going to luck out playing against a team that's in Boston or Detroit that really isn't that good. But at the same time, both teams have very effective forwards, and I'd say their weaknesses would be on the back end, and Detroit's had a lot of problem in net. So it's not going to be easy for Tampa, and I think that while I thought they were clearly the better team before these injuries, even probably with the Stralman injury would hurt them, but Stamkos and Stralman, that'll really hurt them, and it's going to be a tough battle for them in that first round.
Well, yeah, especially if they get Boston, and that's still to be determined, of course, because Boston, you know, what Boston can do is score.
Well, Boston's not in a playoff spot right now.
I know, but if they, I mean, with a win tonight, they'd leapfrog ahead of Detroit.
They're only 2 points behind Florida with the tiebreaker. The only problem for them is I don't know if they even want that, because you want to play the Islanders or the Rangers? That's probably what you end up doing.
Yeah, Islanders, Flyers, Rangers, one of those teams, they all jockey for position there. I think Detroit is probably their best matchup just because Detroit doesn't have the firepower that a team like a team like Boston has, or you know, a team like the Islanders potentially can produce with a guy like Tavares. I mean, Lightning are going to be in tough. You lose one of your best defensemen and you lose your best forward. Mm-hmm. It's hard to win in the playoffs when you're down those two guys. The other news of the week comes from Detroit, where Pavel Datsyuk does not dismiss a report that this might be his final season in Detroit, and he would head to end his playing career in the KHL, as he's previously referred to it, quote, as a dream to play hockey in Russia. The problem for the Red Wings is that because of his current contract was signed when he was over 35 years old, his $7.5 million cap hit would remain on mm-hmm. the Red Wings salary cap, which, I mean, I don't think I need to tell anybody, is a crippling blow for any team in the NHL stuck with a $7.5 million cap hit and no production as a result. Are you surprised about this news that, you know, Datsyuk would, you know, for lack of a better word, really put the screws to the only organization in the NHL that he's known?
Well, I mean, if it's true, it's a very difficult pill to swallow for Detroit and will affect their ability to compete, because not only do you have dead space on the cap, but you lose the quality of player of Datsyuk, even though he's older and not what he once was.
Mm-hmm.
So the 35-plus angle is a huge problem, but that was contemplated when they signed the deal, so you'd expect him to finish it out. But at the same time, I mean, I guess it's from the other angle, Detroit contemplated that as a risk, and they signed him.
Yeah, I mean, the risk is there. It seems like there should be more to a story with that a guy who's known, played his entire career with one organization, mm-hmm. would then really, you know, do this to that organization at the tail end of his career.
Well, we should, you know, repeat that this is just a rumor and this is a possibility. So
yes, and as he just to clarify also for people, it's only a one year implication here.
Yeah, they would have a $7.5 million dead cap hit on their cap for next season.
And if that was the case, then obviously Ken Holland would be in a very tough situation. He'd probably have to do something, guys, similar to when Chris Pronger's contract was traded to Arizona,
yeah.
right? I don't know if you could do that in the summer or at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely.
Maybe you'd have to do that towards next year's trade deadline.
Trade it to a team that needs to get to the salary floor.
Exactly. I don't know if Arizona would do that again, or if there's a Carolina that would do that. But
the difference between the Arizona one, when they acquired Pronger's contract, is insurance is paying that. This would actually, insurance wouldn't be able to pay this contract. It would have to be,
He wouldn't be paid would, the money.
Me, he wouldn't be
dead,
get the
yeah,
right.
It's just dead money. Right. He wouldn't get the money. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Datsyuk has played in Russia during both lockouts and played in Russia, obviously, before coming over to the NHL. But again, I mean, this is all speculation. There's a report. And if there are family reasons for moving back to Russia, then, I mean, Pavel Datsyuk is also in a difficult situation, right? I mean, at the end of the day, he does have obligations.
Fair
if you're
enough.
Under contract and you're making $7.5 million American per year, you'd think that you'd honor that contract, or you'd work a situation out where you could still be with your family. I mean, I don't want to put myself in Datsyuk's shoes, but certainly, Drew, back to your question.
Well, he could retire.
Well, that is an option.
Well, I guess it still doesn't help the Red Wings in the sense that they're still stuck
post,
with it on the 30,
35,
post
yeah.
35. That's the problem with it is, I mean, it's hard to believe that it should be allowed that a player who's under a legally binding North American contract can just go and play for another professional hockey or league.
I mean,
Kovalchuk did it.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, Kovalchuk screwed the Devils way more than any other player in recent memory than I can think. I mean, the Devils...
I mean, it's not like they're competing leagues, really.
I know. I guess, though. It just seems like, it just seems a little bit odd. How about that?
Well, it just be... I mean... I think this gets legs because of his lack of denial, because he seems like a pretty forthright guy.
Yeah. Here's GM Ken Holland, the quote to Ted Kulfen of the Detroit News, quote, "I haven't talked to Pavel. He has a year to go on his contract. Are the rumors news to me? I hear a lot of rumors. He has a year to go on his contract. I'll sit down with all our players at the end of the year, one by one, and talk to them all." Well, certainly not, any sort of, significant denial there that...
I mean, Kenny Holland's a pretty forthright guy, too, Drew. You're not going to get the, he's not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
So...
And it sounds like Datsyuk's not, Datsyuk's agent, same thing. Pavel also has one more year left on his NHL contract. We will sit down with Ken Holland at the conclusion of the season. So nobody's denying it. Like you would often hear denial.
This is, it goes to Ezzie's point, and it's a good one. And this is, you work together here. If you have a good relationship with the team and you feel like you want to go back home for whatever the reasons are, we don't ask Travis Hamonic's reasons, and we shouldn't ask Pavel Datsyuk's reasons.
Sure.
Okay, I mean, we shouldn't have a double standard there. If that's the case, then from a leverage perspective, if Ken Holland can go in the offseason and have little to no talk about this and make a move with another team without the pressure and the media attention, and satisfy everybody, then so be it. Because let's be honest here, it's certainly unforeseen that Datsyuk was going to retire after this year, after the year anyways, the next season. So this isn't something that Ken Holland and his staff there, and a very qualified staff, hasn't contemplated.
Just throwing this out there, but if Pavel Datsyuk did decide that he wants to go back to the KHL, is buying him out an option? And that comes off the books.
I'd have to look into the CBA rules and regulations regarding a buyout of a contract. Can you buy out a contract that's over 35, that's signed when you're over 35?
I have to look into it.
I don't know off the top of my head either. But something worth monitoring is Datsyuk is going to spend another year.
I've been waiting for you guys to buy me out now for 3 or 4 years. So
yeah, we've offered you a cheeseburger so far, and I'm surprised that really didn't get it done. Let's head to break. When we come back, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News joins us to talk about the Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. You're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Curtis Pashelka. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, good evening, good afternoon where you are in San Jose, and thanks for joining us.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm actually just in Minneapolis. I got a game tomorrow night, or St. Paul, as you said. Same time zone as you guys. It's been good so far, for sure.
Then I repeal my good afternoon, and I will stick with good evening then to you.
Sure.
Curtis, obviously we brought you on. The Jets and the Sharks will meet in San Jose for the final time later on this week, coming up on Thursday night. You look at the Sharks, and they've sort of quietly gone about their business all season long. They're, pretty secure. They're probably going to finish third in the Pacific. It's unlikely that they're going to catch, Los Angeles or Anaheim, even though mathematically they still can. Is this San Jose Sharks team sort of enjoying being a little bit under the radar? For so many years, they had all the pressure on them in the playoffs as one of the favorites, and for so many years, they were unable to meet those expectations. Are they sort of enjoying that role of the sort of quiet, unassuming team?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to some degree anyway. It's certainly, they'd rather have it like this than it was last season, where they weren't going to make the playoffs and they had some drama off the ice. So this year it's been pretty much kind of business as usual, kind of a business-like attitude for these guys. And they've individually had some really nice seasons. Obviously, Joe Thornton and Brent Burns are both having really good seasons, but you're right. It's kind of been an interesting season in the fact that they haven't gotten a lot of attention, maybe across the league this year. Part of that's because they never really led the division this year. The Kings have pretty much led the division since I think late November. And you look at a team like the Ducks and the way they've been playing since Christmas. So you're right. I mean, they haven't been kind of flying on the radar like this for a little while. I don't think they mind it. I think they'd like to get maybe a little bit more attention to maybe some of the things they've been doing this year. But overall, I think it's they're fine with it, how things are going right now.
Curtis, you mentioned earlier Joe Thornton and Brent Burns. And Brent Burns is having a career season, 27 goals, which is really ridiculous for a defenseman, 74 points. Anybody who listens to this show knows that I'm a huge Brent Burns fan. When you talk about Burns and Thornton, do you think they're being given enough credit as far as the Hart Trophy and Norris Trophy races go?
Well, I don't know about the Hart Trophy for Joe. I think that he's probably going to be a very good candidate for the Selke, just because of the way people are really noticing this year his commitment to defense and how that's maybe translated to help him sort of create chances on the offensive end. Certainly the Sharks have a little bit more depth this year. That's helped, so it'll take a little bit of the attention away from him. or not as much attention on him as maybe has there been, there's been in the past. So he's not, you know, I'm not sure about a Hart Trophy maybe candidacy for him, but definitely for Burns. I mean, like you mentioned, you mentioned the number he's put up, and you know, obviously when you talk about the Norris, you're going to talk about Carlson, you're going to talk about Doughty, maybe Shea Weber is in that mix as well, but Burns is right there. I don't know if he's going to win, but I do sense that he's going to be a finalist for the award, just because of the numbers he's putting up. And he is more of a visible guy on that team than maybe some other players are. I mean, obviously, everyone knows, you know, how he did at the All-Star game and sort of the personality he kind of showed at that event. And so he's, I would say for more or less, I think it's Burns is more of a solid candidate for the Norris. I think Joe Thornton's more of a solid candidate for the Selke. But you never know. I mean, the way Joe's been playing, if he finishes off the season strong, he could definitely get some hard consideration.
You know, Curtis, you talk there extensively about Joe Thornton, and I mean, to me, and I think probably more than just me, this is a guy whose legacy is going to be determined by if he can ever make a run in the playoffs to the high level that, you know, people expected at some point. And he's not in his prime anymore, and you mentioned how well he's been playing, but is there anything different about Joe Thornton this year? Is there anything that is there anything that you see that would make you expect the results for the Sharks and Joe Thornton to be different than they have in past playoff failures?
Well, I think this new coaching staff has sort of re-energized him a little bit, and re-energized a few other players on the team as well. Like I mentioned before, I mean, the Sharks do have more depth this year. And you can also maybe point to the fact that he doesn't have to, you know, he went through the drama last year of having the cap, first having the captaincy stripped from him, and then later on in the season having a kind of a spat with Doug Wilson, you know, kind of just a lot of things kind of built up and added up throughout the course of the season. This year, kind of a new slate under Pete DeBoer. He's come in. I think he's really got the ear of this team. The team really has responded to him and what he's looking for and how he wants this team to play. And I don't think it can be overlooked about how well defensively he's been playing right now. He's a guy, you know, first in the back check, create turnovers and get things going in the other direction. So he's having a great year. There's no doubt about it. And the way he's been playing, I think it kind of energizes other guys in the team too. They kind of, you know, look at him and say, geez, if he's doing that at 36 and he's been in the league all these years, why can't I, you know, at least, match that sort of effort and energy that he brings up?
You know, there's, you know, you talk about the depth, Curtis, and I agree. I mean, the depth on the back end, guys who can play different positions up front. If I'm looking at, you know, I'm sure we're going to ask you about the goaltending shortly, but you look at the forward group, and they're going to be likely going up. Well, it's going to be one of Anaheim or Los Angeles. I guess my question to you is, do you see there being enough grit and maybe enough willingness to go to the dirty areas in front of the net to beat one of those two teams?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to have to do that. They're going to have to score those goals around the blue paint if they want to knock off in L.A. or if they want to beat Anaheim in a seven-game series. That's where most of their goals have been scored this season. And you know, I think that it is going to come down to sort of a test of wills against one of those two teams. Plus, I think that, a guy like Martin Jones, he'll probably get the start at least game one, game two of a potential playoff series against one of those two teams. And he's going to have to outplay a Jonathan Quick. He's going to have to outplay a Gibson, you know, in that first round series or whoever they play. And sort of show that he's ready for this moment. He's ready for the big stage, and can kind of lead this team to at least one playoff series victory, if not two. So no, it's a good question for sure.
You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Our guest is Curtis Peschalka of the San Jose Mercury News, talking about the Sharks, the Winnipeg Jets opponent, upcoming on Thursday night in San Jose. And Curtis, Richard alluded to the Sharks goaltending, and you look back to February 29th, you know, when James Reimer was acquired by, you know, from the Toronto Maple Leafs, or right before that at the NHL trade deadline, and you look at the numbers that Reimer's put up in 7 games, and you look at the numbers that Jones has put up in 11 games, and they're virtually identical. 926, 927 save percentage, 1.92 goals against average, 1.85 goals against average. You know, is the San Jose Sharks goaltending? For years, they sort of struggled with Alex Stalock and with Antti Niemi. Is this the most solid goaltending the Sharks have had entering the playoffs in the last 5, maybe 10 years?
I'd say it's pretty close. I mean, the lockout season where Niemi was a finalist for the Vezina, they felt pretty good about the way he was playing going into that postseason. But you're right. I mean, in the past, it's either just been, you know, if Antti Niemi wasn't on, then chances are the Sharks weren't gonna be very successful in the playoffs. Before that, if Nabokov wasn't on, then same kind of thing. But you can point to those two guys and say, you know, if one's not necessarily playing that well or is struggling in a playoff series, you can turn to the other guy and not miss a beat, really. I mean, James Reimer played you know, Saturday night against Nashville, and a couple of bad bounces, you know, as far as giving out a couple of goals, but he hung in there, gave the Sharks a chance to come back, and they end up scoring 2 goals and in the third period, then winning it in the shootout. So the players have a lot of confidence in both goalies. I would say, yeah, if one guy's struggling, then they have no problems turning to the other guy and knowing that he could probably get the job done as well.
Curtis, the big two moves that the San Jose Sharks made in the offseason, acquiring defenseman Paul Martin and signing Joel Ward to the 3-year contract, and he's quietly had a really good season there, playing on the second line right wing there with Logan Couture. How valuable is his playoff experience going to be? Because he always seems to save his best for the playoffs. How important is that going to be for the Sharks team?
Well, I think that's one of the main reasons they signed him. Obviously, you know, he's a good guy, character guy in the room, possesses some leadership qualities in that respect. But you look at what he's done in the playoffs in past seasons, and you know, that's what the Sharks were really hoping for when they signed Joel Ward. If they can get to the postseason, here's a guy who's got a track record. He knows you know, how to score those kind of dirty goals, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, this is kind of, you know, interesting to see how he responds to the Western Conference and going against an Anaheim and going against an LA. But history shows that this is time to shine, and I'm kind of interested myself as to how that's all going to happen. He is on the second line right now with Couture and Donskoy, and so you know, if those guys are able to chip in with a few goals, obviously that takes a little bit of pressure off Thorne and Pavelski and Hurdle. So it'll be interesting to see how he does, though. I think it's going to be kind of fun to watch, I think.
Curtis, we mentioned Brent Burns earlier. We just mentioned Paul Martin, who they signed in the offseason. You know, Mark-Edward Vlasic's having a few injury problems right now. But do you think that this defense is solid enough to go deep in the playoffs?
I think it's deep. You know, at bringing in a guy like Polak, who can compare up with Brendan Dillon as that third pair. Mark-Edward Vlasic says he'll definitely be ready to go, you know, once the playoffs start. So you pair him with Justin Braun, and you mentioned obviously the Martin Burns pairing. That's three pretty good pairings, and I think they feel pretty comfortable that they can throw those guys out there just about against any line and feel that you know, feel pretty confident in that. So yeah, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they decide to kind of match up if they do play the Kings, because you know, the 3-1-1 against the Kings this year during their regular season, they probably should have been 4-1, but they lost a late lead in a game a couple of months ago. But I think it's a pretty deep lineup, and we'll kind of see how that all turns out. I think it's going to be interesting to see how those guys respond to sort of that intense sort of playoff series against either the Ducks or the Kings.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. He joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota, where the Sharks and the Wild do battle tomorrow night. Curtis, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We always appreciate your insight into the Sharks.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve. NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve returns on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, big thanks to Curtis Pashelka for joining us. Still to come on the program, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. This segment brought to you by our newest sponsors, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com and follow them on Twitter at Bell Acres. And of course, big welcome to them to being on board. Gentlemen, the NHL has expanded, of course, as we all know, a very strong presence in the southwestern United States. But if you believe what the Sports Business Daily has to say, they're going to try and get a presence in Mexico, as Mexican Ice Hockey Federation President Joaquin de la Garma says he is in talks with NHL officials regarding hosting two NHL preseason games in Mexico City next year. A good idea to head to Mexico for the NHL?
Is there going to be tequila in the water bottles instead of Gatorade?
I don't know. It's an exhibition game, maybe.
I think it would be a great opportunity to grow the game in a non-traditional market, right? I mean, there is not a huge history of hockey in Mexico for obvious reasons. The climate isn't very conducive to hockey, but I mean, if you're talking about the spectacle and the amount of interest that you could garner, I mean, Mexico has a huge population, especially Mexico City. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a big hotspot for Canadians and Americans, right? And people from all over the world, for that matter. So, you know, this came as news to me, but I think it would be great. I mean, the NHL's talked a lot about growing the game in Europe, Richie, and, you know, the Olympics you have coming up in Asia. So, I mean, this would be great. I think anything to grow the game is positive in my mind.
It's kind of a weird place, you know, because, I mean, they're never going to expand there.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever going to be a team there. That's true.
So, I mean, to me, when I think of Mexico, I think of Canadians and Americans going down, especially Canadians, and watching games down there, you know, and they're streaming it or being down there all winter and watching it. And sure. Are they based in Mexico City? Probably not. They maybe go in for a game, sure. I mean, it never hurts to expand. Like, it never hurts to play elsewhere. And what does it cost them, an exhibition game? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised. First of all, I'm surprised there's a Mexican hockey
International Ice Hockey Federation.
Yeah. But, you know, you would think that they would go elsewhere. But at the same time, I mean, they played in China like back in the late 90s. They've played in Europe many times.
Japan before Nagano.
Yeah, Nagano. So I'm not completely shocked they're just going to the next place to try and maximize dollar value, I guess. But, I mean,
I was thinking
how big is the rink there?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I mean, they'll fill it.
Are they going to play on Grastria?
No. I mean, they'll obviously you know, fill it as much as they can get as much attendance as they can. You know, I was thinking, again, it was a long year ago. I was like, oh, this is a little bit weird. Then I got to thinking, you know, they've been in the southwestern United States. They've been in California now for, what, 30 years?
Yeah, there's a lot of money in
40
California.
Years. They've been in Arizona now since 96. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a little bit surprised it's taken them this long to try and get into the Mexico City market. You know, it's not like you're not in the southwestern United States mm-hmm. and this is your first foray down there. You know, you can argue that, you know, having been in the southern U.S. for so long, that maybe this is an overdue move to start maybe tapping into a untapped potential hockey market.
Right, and I think you know, when they do announce when the game's going to be, there's going to be a lot of, especially Southern American fans that probably go there. You might even get some Canadian hockey fans that happen to be in that area attending this game, just because, you know, hockey fans, I think, like to, you know, celebrate the game anywhere that it's played. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, there are some radio broadcasts to Mexico. So there's a possibility here, I think, from the NHL standpoint, to grow the interest from a media perspective to potentially broadcast games on TV. I think that's probably going to be part of it, right? Not just to have a standalone game and generate revenue that way, but to also kind of generate interest to sell it on TV. I would think that's part of it. I haven't heard anything from the NHL, just because I just read this article 20 minutes ago or whatever, but
this article was in rapid fire, for the record, on Saturday shows. You've had ample opportunity to look this up.
I don't always read what you put in there. That shouldn't be breaking news to you.
I'm completely illiterate.
But let me ask. Like, I'm just surprised. I was surprised Mexico, and then I wasn't as surprised when I kind of went through like where else they would go. Like, what else, what's the alternative to expand your base?
In within, you know, without going to Brazil or something ridiculous.
Well, I mean, that's probably next.
You might as well just keep heading south.
Well,
you're right.
Especially the way they can do these outdoor games.
Guys,
Mexico
City has millions and millions of people. I mean, there's opportunity here. Well, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it is a little bit surprising that there hasn't been any form of NHL hockey in Mexico City. So it's great. I mean,
my favorite part of the whole thing. So according to Mr. De La Garma, you know, the president of the Mexican Ice Hockey Federation, he says the most popular teams in Mexico are the San Jose Sharks, the LA Kings, makes perfect sense.
No surprise.
The Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm thinking to myself, this is, in a nutshell, shows you what's everything that was wrong with the Arizona Coyotes. Because they would be the closest team to the Mexican border.
They've never had any sustained success.
I know, but I mean, you know, you think that, you know, the Arizona Coyotes, one of the ownership litany of owners they've had over the years, would say, hey, you know, there's a major international city, however many hours south of us.
That's fair.
Why haven't we looked into that market?
They haven't been able to attract people from their own state.
Well, yes, no argument.
You have
argument.
To focus on that first before you start talking about Mexico. Come on.
Well, I mean, they have in past years been able to attract people in their own state. But, I mean, I just think that, you know, the Coyotes, the fact the Coyotes aren't the, you know, Mexico City's team or Mexico's team, if they're, I mean, you know,
Is Australia next? Like, is that?
Why not? What's the downside?
Well, that's just so much travel before in the preseason.
Sure. I mean, you know, but. Yeah, I mean, the problem with Australia is it's so many hours to get there for however many preseason games or whatever else. But, you know, if they went to, you know, they went to Japan, and they went to Japan in September, which so wasn't tied to the Olympics. So there's ways to do it. You know, there's a reason why the NFL is looking at playing a regular season game in China. The NHL should be front and center in China. You know, Charles Wang, the Islanders owner, has a huge presence in China because look how many people are in China. Of course you should be there. You should be absolutely everywhere where you think that there is a growth potential for the league.
You know, Drew, in China, they don't call it Chinese food. They just call it food.
And you laugh. The worst part, Richard, is you laugh at this. Like, you think that's humorous, and you're sitting here laughing. Like, my God, the wit on this man. How am I so lucky to sit next to him on a regular basis? Tell you what, let's find out if Stephen Wino thinks you're as funny. We'll head to break. We'll bring in Stephen Wino of the Associated Press next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Drew Mundell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Stephen Wino. Stephen is our former, is our favorite former quasi-Canadian who now covers the NHL as well as all sports for the Associated Press. Stephen, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening. That's what I want to go on my business card. Former quasi-Canadian.
Phil, as long as you give us credit, you can use that. You can use that line all you want.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Stephen, we obviously brought you on to, you know, whip around the NHL as we enter the final week of regular season action prior to the playoffs beginning in 9 days' time, the 13th of April. You know, the Washington Capitals, you're based now in Washington, and the Capitals have been far and away the best team in the NHL this year. You look at the – this isn't so much a question about the Capitals, but it's a question about the ramifications of Steven Stamkos' injury. You know, prior to that injury, a lot of people would say that the Lightning would have been the biggest threat to the Washington Capitals. Does that injury for the to Stamkos sort of knock the Lightning out of the running as being, you know, a contender for the Eastern Conference title?
I thought the injury to Anton Stroman knocked the Lightning off of being a contender in the Eastern Conference, really. I mean, he was as valuable as Anton Stroman was to Tampa's run to the Stanley Cup final last year. Victor Hedman, as great as he is, loses some value not having Anton Stroman there. The Steven Stamkos injury is another significant blow to the point where now Tampa is a team that, as an opponent, you want to face in the first round. There's just not that extra weapon there. You don't have that number two defenseman. Ben Bishop's been terrific, but that's a team that looks very vulnerable right now. And if I'm listing a top three or four challenges to the Capitals in the Eastern Conference, Tampa Bay Lightning are not on that list.
Steven, what did you think about the suspensions handed out to Duncan Keith last Friday and then Nazem Kadri getting four games for his cross-checking of Luke Glendening of the Red Wings?
I agree with what Ray Ferraro said earlier today, that there probably should have been a bigger gap between those. And I don't know if that should have meant two or three games for Nazem Kadri and then continuing with six games for Duncan Keith. Because what Babcock had to say today about it being a hockey play gone wrong, I tend to agree with that. Not forgiving Kadri, but saying maybe that should have been a two or three game suspension instead of what it was at four. Duncan Keith, I understand why the league did it. I agree with it in the sense of you have to almost treat a playoff game. Our friend Ken Lee said this to me, that you have to almost treat a playoff game as two games or three games instead of one. So if you say that's a five regular season game, and maybe if that happened 2 weeks ago, that's an eight regular season game suspension or seven regular season game suspension, then it makes sense in that context. If you're punishing the Blackhawks, potentially having two games without Duncan Keith for that action, even as retaliatory as it was and as violent as the thrust was, I think six games is about right. If you would have told me if that happened in November and it was an 8 or 10 game suspension, I wouldn't have been all that stunned by that either.
You know, it's interesting, Stephen. You look at the Eastern Conference and you were talking about Tampa Bay, and as he asked you about, you know, kind of Washington and a threat to Washington. Who do you think is the biggest threat to the Capitals in the Eastern Conference, which seems, you know, certainly not as deep as the West?
At this point, you make me pick at this moment. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that's even without Evgeny Malkin. They've been terrific. Even without Marc-Andre Fleury, the past couple games, back-to-back, Matt Murray was terrific. This is a team under Mike Sullivan that is scoring and playing like we haven't seen since the real fun days of Dan Bylsma in Pittsburgh. And there is, for whatever it's worth, you throw out history because I don't think anything beyond the past 10 years matters, but the Capitals have not beaten the Penguins in the playoffs in this Ovechkin era. Sidney Crosby has found his game right now. I think the Flyers would be a tough matchup in the first round. I think it would be tough to see the Red Wings in the first round, just because those are teams that could give the Capitals some trouble, not that they would lose, but that the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, the way they're playing under Mike Sullivan, the Capitals would have to play a good six or seven games to beat them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. We're discussing the NHL within the final week of the regular season. Stephen, it's sort of an unfortunate deja vu for the New York Islanders. They lose Travis Hamonic over the weekend. He's going to be out for the rest of the regular season. We know that. We don't know his status for the playoffs. If he's not back in time for the start of the first round, or, you know, quickly in the first round, is it going to be another sort of one and done for the New York Islanders? Can they handle the loss of Hamonic?
I think it's tough to handle the loss of Hamonic when you couple it with not having Yaroslav Halak. And if Halak is not healthy, and Greiss has to shoulder the load with also Jean-François Berube out, that's a really tough break for the Islanders. And this is a team right now that's holding on to dear life, trying to make sure it still makes it into the playoffs. Whether the Islanders lose more or the Bruins or the Flyers or the Red Wings, three of those four teams somehow have to make the playoffs. I wouldn't be scared to face the Islanders right now if I'm anyone, particularly if it were the Florida Panthers winning the Atlantic Division and getting to see the Islanders as a wild card team. The Islanders can present some matchup difficulties for some teams. That would be the only thing you'd say. How do you defend against John Tavares? There's enough depth there with the Brock Nelsons of the world, the Kyle Postas of the world, and you can say that team can score. But yeah, that's a really brutal loss with Hamonic when you don't have Jaroslav Halak in there as an extra line of defense.
Steven, what did you make of Patrick Waugh's comments last night? He throws Matt Duchene under the bus, and then he throws basically the rest of the core of the team under the bus. And I realized that Matt Duchene might have celebrated in a game that they should have been more focused on winning. But, I mean, Patrick Waugh seemed to really be a little too hard on Matt Duchene, in my opinion. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And Patrick Waugh is an old-school hockey guy, and the unwritten rules of the sport, Matt Duchene did something that you probably shouldn't do in a situation like that. You don't want your teammates, when you're down that much in a game, and your coaches don't necessarily want to see that kind of celebration. But Matt Duchene's a terrific player. He's an all-world player, an Olympian. You know what? In that sense, you can't get that mad at him for celebrating a goal. My bigger issue would be that team and what's happened to them down the stretch. Wilting might be too strong of a word because Duchene's been hurt, because McKinnon's been hurt. And what makes me wonder is what Patrick Waugh's job security is with that team. And I don't know whether he has carte blanche because of his standing in that organization and because of the power he shares with Joe Sakic there, that he basically can say these things because he's above everything. But if this were Mike Johnston saying it, if this were Todd Richards saying it, and then the coach were fired the next day, you wouldn't be all that surprised to see it happen. Patrick Waugh has the cachet in hockey, in the Avalanche organization, to be able to do something like that. But I wonder how much that and his coaching style has worn thin on these Avalanche players over the past couple of years.
Yeah, was that the famous Shadow the Golden in the background?
That was the very famous Shadow the Golden barking in the background.
Okay, well, that's a good dog, so he's allowed to keep that up.
By the way, Shadow the Golden has more Twitter followers than Drew has.
By far.
I'm sorry, Drew.
No, don't be. I'd rather spend time with a Golden Retriever than myself any day of the week.
Steven, back to the Duchene thing for a second. Like, to me, if I'm playing on that team with Matt Duchene, obviously he's an integral part of the roster, and he's one of the reasons that they're even in a competitive spot for a playoff position. But don't I, like Patrick Waugh, having been a former player, don't I feel the way he does? Like, down 4-0, the celebration was way over the top. Like, if I'm playing on that team, aren't I pretty annoyed that Matt Duchene appears to be prioritizing personal success over the team's success?
Maybe, but they hadn't scored about 16 years at that point, so I can't really blame Matt Duchene for wanting to celebrate like that. I think if you're a teammate and you see that, your first instinct is, this stinks. And then you realize that this is probably your best player, whether it's him or Nathan MacKinnon at this point, and that he probably lost his head. If you ask Matt Duchene now, do you regret doing it? Do you wish you'd celebrated a little bit differently? He probably would have, because you get caught up in the moment, and he's probably excited and losing his head. Now, you understand why a teammate or a coach might be upset about that, but Patrick Waugh, to rip into him like that after Matt Duchene is one of the primary reasons you're even in contention on a team that had no business probably being in contention, that's where I think it's not quite, doesn't quite add up.
Where do you then, if you're Patrick Waugh, this is clearly old school and new school, and if you're going to have the public war, new school is going to win, right? I think we know that.
Oh, yeah.
Is he, I mean, him and Joe Sakic are obviously very close. Do you think that he says this out of, and you've kind of alluded to this, but does he say this out of frustration where things are going, or because he's so sturdy in his position with Joe Sakic then he can say whatever the heck he wants?
I think it's frustration, and not knowing the internal politics there of, does Joe Sakic even have the power to fire Patrick Waugh, that it's a frustration of a coach on a day-to-day basis and not a calculated effort to call out his best player. Because just the latter of that would speak to a way different power dynamic existing there, and how many coaches in the NHL could you say have the power to challenge their best player and know they're going to win that battle full out. And Patrick Waugh, it would be hard for me right now to see Patrick Waugh fired as coach of that team, especially after getting into the playoffs 2 years ago and then being close this year. But I don't know that he's swinging around like that, like it's going, like he owns the place and can, is able to say that about Matt Duchene with a very calculated effort.
Stephen Wino is our guest on NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. We're talking about the NHL as they're into the final week of games prior to the playoffs beginning. Now, Stephen, earlier today, you know, Canada's poet laureate on Twitter, Don Cherry, went after Tuukka Rask, the Boston Bruins goaltender, putting really a lot of the blame for the Bruins' struggles, defensive struggles recently, on the goaltender, saying, quote, he can't stop a beach ball. How much of the Bruins' struggles do you attribute to Tuukka Rask? How much of the Bruins' struggles do you attribute to a weak defense?
I attribute most of it to a weak defense. The problem is Tuukka Rask's standard has been high enough that that team has looked better in front of Tuukka Rask because of how good he's been. And this is a defense without Dennis Seidenberg. This is an aging Zdeno Chara. This is a defense that's lost Matt Barkowski and lost Dougie and traded Dougie Hamilton, and is not the same defense. Not even close to the same defense that won the Stanley Cup in front of Tim Thomas in 2011, or even went to the Cup Final in 2013 in front of Rask. Now, Rask has not had a good year, he started struggling, and the Bruins struggled because of that. But you can't put everything on Tuukka Rask. I mean, he was not good in that game yesterday. Deserved every bit of being pulled from that game against Chicago. But you, at a certain point, that is a Swiss cheese defense the Bruins have right now. It's an inexperienced group. It's not playing to the caliber we're used to seeing out of that Bruins kind of identity defense, and there's not enough offense to make up for it. And because of that, there's a lot of blame you can throw around, and it's going to start with Don Sweeney, and it's going to go to Claude Julien and down the organization. I don't think anybody should be shadowed from criticism right now, but Tuukka Rask would not be the first person I'm pointing a finger at.
Stephen, we've talked a lot on this show, especially the last week or so, about how the Washington Capitals are a step above the rest of the teams in the Eastern Conference. Some have concerns that they haven't played very meaningful hockey over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Are you concerned? Because when I look at this Washington Capitals team, I don't see very many weaknesses.
I'm not concerned, but the point that Barry Trotz made when we had a conversation earlier today was that there's not much that separates one from eight in a conference or one from 16 in the playoffs because of just the funny way playoffs go, that when you win a President's Trophy, it doesn't entitle you to really anything other than home ice advantage throughout. And I'm not going to get worried yet because this team hasn't played a meaningful game in, at this point, several months. They've been so far, the Capitals have been so far ahead of the rest of the NHL since before the All-Star break that it's tough to judge how they played. But there's a legitimate concern in that room, and it's existed for a couple of weeks now at least, that they're not going to be able to flip a switch when the playoffs start. And this is why players internally started talking about it a couple of weeks ago, where they said, we need to get up into playoff mode now. And that's been their message internally, is these games, even though they don't have any real meaning other than maybe Braden Holtby in the single-season wins record that Martin Brodeur has now, they can't coast into the playoffs because this team doesn't know if it can flip a switch immediately when game one starts. If you're the Capitals and you all of a sudden start playing like they played in December and January, when all of a sudden this is a team that is building a big lead and hasn't lost, this team hasn't lost back-to-back games in regulation all season. Even with some of these struggles, so quote-unquote struggles lately, they haven't lost back-to-back games in regulation at all, and they're in the game 76 already. So the question, if they start playing like that as soon as the playoffs start, no one in the East is going to beat them. It's not even close if they play their best hockey. The question is, how are they going to be able to ramp it up when the intensity picks up? And as Barry Trotz mentioned today, you basically are running into a burning house. You can't practice that. You're going into a burning house, and everything's chaotic and everything's faster, and the Capitals need to get back up to the speed they were playing at several months ago.
Final question for you, Stephen. If we go around the whole league, we'll have you for another 2 hours, and we're only on the air until 8 o'clock. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot. We asked, you know, who's the biggest threat to Washington? You said Pittsburgh. A different kind of question, but still putting you on the spot. If you had to pick one of L.A., Anaheim to be the team coming out of the West, which one would it be?
I'm taking L.A. I'm going to take L.A. because this team has been there before, and the defense is much weaker than it had been in either 2012 or 2014. There's not the depth of scoring. They're going to miss Justin Williams in the playoffs. But this is a team that I do believe if there's a switch, if that kind of thing does exist in sports, that the Kings know how to start playing playoff hockey. Their style of on the attack, heavy forecheck kind of hockey can win in the playoffs. If there's the team that I'd be scared of if I'm the Kings is the San Jose Sharks. They don't match up very well against San Jose. If it's an L.A. Anaheim second-round series, I like the Kings coming out of the Western Conference. If it's an L.A.-San Jose, it becomes much tougher. But that's a team with Jonathan Quick, and when we see playoff Drew Doughty, which is almost as good as Olympic Drew Doughty, that's where you say the Kings have an advantage over every team in the West, except maybe Chicago, which looked pretty good for a period and a half yesterday.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, always appreciate your time and your insights, and say hi to Shadow for us as well.
Thanks very much. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Stephen. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the O'Legal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 7 in the evening. Big thanks to Stephen Wino and Curtis Pashelka for joining us on the program. In case you missed either of those, be sure to download the show on iTunes, subscribe, get it sent to you each and every week. That's Illegal Curve Hockey on iTunes. You can find us there. Illegal Curve, speaking of which, is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or send us a tweet at Illegal Curve. We'll provide you with all the relevant information. We mentioned in the interview with Stephen Patrick Waugh's rant at Matt Duchene and his actions following his goal last night. In case you missed it, here is Patrick Waugh last night after Duchene scored to make it a 4-1 game.
And the thing I have a bit of a hard time is the reaction of Dutchie after he scores. It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that? I mean, it's not the reflect that we want from our guys. Not at all. We need to change the mindset. I mean, I think we have a losing mindset right now. I think we have to find ways to believe more in ourselves. And sometimes things are not going to go our way.
Strong words, strong condemnation from the Avalanche head coach. Whose side do you fall on? Excessive celebration, an excessive reaction. You know, do you think this will have any long-term lingering effects?
I mean, you get an insight into what goes on in the locker room. So I'm going to say this. I think the celebration's ridiculous. I think if I'm in that locker room, I'm not happy about it. I think Patrick Waugh should have handled it behind closed doors. But you're just getting a peek into what happens behind closed doors. So I think they're both wrong here. I just don't understand. You know, I don't care. And Stephen Wino pointed out they hadn't scored in a long time. I don't care if they hadn't scored in a long time. You're basically your playoff hopes are going down the drain.
Sure.
You score a 4-0 goal, like you're done. Like you get up, you try and get another goal. You show to the guys you don't excessively celebrate there. I have a huge issue with that. Let me tell you something too about Patrick Waugh. People don't like it, and you know people don't like him, and he has his critics. Sure, but I mean, the guys won 4 Stanley Cups. You know, 86-93. 96-01.
Mm-hmm.
The guy knows how to win, and he knows what it takes to win. And even if he doesn't need to have played in the NHL to have that opinion and to take that position as a coach, but you know, you want to take that position behind closed doors. But the position itself, I have absolutely no problem with.
You're right, though, Richie. I mean, both guys are losers in this sense because the Colorado Avalanche lose the game, and mm-hmm. Patrick Waugh publicly humiliates one of his best players,
right?
Right? And you know, Richie, I'm a huge fan of Patrick Waugh. You're right. He's arguably the best goalie of all time. He's at the very least a top three goalie of all time with the four Stanley Cups and the Vezinas and all that. So when he talks, the players listen. We've talked about the Avalanche a lot. I think I was the only one of the three of us to pick the Avalanche to make the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs last year after winning the Central Division 2 years ago. The defense has been better than it was last year, but it's still been the Achilles heel of this team. They don't move the puck quick enough. It's a bit of a one-dimensional team, one-line team with Duchesne and MacKinnon, and depending if they break those guys up. I mean, you're talking about really skilled forwards with a pretty mediocre rest of the team. And I have to give it a shout-out to Iginla, who had another 20-goal season, but this has kind of been a bit of a patchwork team. You know, third and fourth lines aren't very good. You know, the bottom pairing and even second pairing D hasn't been good. I mean, I like guys like Tyson Barrie and Eric Johnson, but, you know, this isn't the best group of defensemen when you're talking about the other teams in the Central Division, right?
Sure.
But let's be honest. They went into this game having lost their last two games before that. And they were
a win.
It was a must win. And the Wild lost. So they could have gone into their next game only down 3 points, and then they're still in it. Right now, they basically have to win out, and then Minnesota has to lose out.
How do you celebrate down that much?
It's ridiculous, Rich. I mean, I agree. I think, Drew, just quickly, I think that when you're talking about Matt Duchesne, I think he's definitely a top forward. I mean, he might be.
Oh, for sure. He's a
he might
player.
Be on the Olympic team again in 2018. But
does that tell
I mean, if you score there, you put your head down, you skate back to center ice, and you go score another one.
That's right.
I mean, you have to win that game, and there wasn't a lot of time left, so I understand.
Yeah, I think they scored with like four minutes to go or something.
I think there's a big problem, a big leadership void on this
team.
That's
what I was going to ask.
I don't think Gabriel Landeskog has been a very good captain. I mean,
they put it on him when he was like 14 years old.
Well, and I don't think they've rectified it. I think they've kept him as the captain. I don't think that he's a good leader for this team. And, I mean, look at how this team has collapsed down the stretch.
That was going to be my question. That's what I was going to go with. Does this reaction from Matt Duchesne, who is, you know, arguably, if not the best player on that team, certainly one of the top two best players on that team, does that reaction from that player at that time tell you that there is a leadership problem in that dressing room?
I mean, is it that one moment? I don't know, but it could lead you to wonder if there is.
You know, that this wasn't immediately nipped in the bud by a guy like Jerome Iginla, you know, who, you know, would pull him aside or do whatever
he
needs.
I know he wouldn't do it on the bench.
But
he did it in private.
But, you know, do something to, you know, where Patrick Waugh would just come out and say, we'll deal with that in the dressing room.
Well, I think a lot of ways, Edmonton somewhat, Colorado somewhat similar to Edmonton. You have a lot of young guys with expectations and responsibility thrust upon them too soon with a weaker back end. And a legacy in the city. I mean, you talk Colorado hasn't been around as long as Edmonton, but winning the shadow of Gretzky, the shadow of Curry, the shadow of Sakic and Forsberg. I mean, the fans are at the games. They might have been too young for those teams, but their parents were fans of those young teams. So there is a pressure there, and maybe I've thought those organizations are similar in some ways, and maybe there is a leadership issue.
And Richie, we know that Matt Duchesne was possibly going to be traded earlier in the season. You heard that Ottawa was really after him. And you have to wonder, is Matt Duchesne going to be traded in the offseason? Because to me, this Colorado Avalanche team is flawed. I think there's a lot of talent there, Rich.
I don't think you get better, though. I see what you mean. I know the rumors. I don't think you get better by trading one of those guys. You keep those guys and you help your core. The thing is, they don't have the luxury of that like Edmonton does, where you can trade Nugent Hopkins and you have Draisaitl. Like, if you trade Duchesne or Landeskog,
there's nobody to fill in the gap right now.
Yeah, I mean, Landeskog less so because I know Duchesne and MacKinnon both play a little bit of wing, but really, you're looking at the guys who can play center. Landeskog's not a center. But you don't have that ready-made. Now, it doesn't mean they couldn't trade for it, but there's too many. There's not enough depth there because they haven't been as bad as long. Like, they had the year where they went into the playoffs.
Well, they just traded Ryan O'Reilly less than a year ago, right?
Yeah.
So you've traded Ryan O'Reilly, and Zdorov is a good young defenseman. Mikhail Gregorenko, the jury's still out on him. I mean, he has one good game followed by five bad games.
Sure.
So, I mean,
enigma.
You're not hitching your wagon to Gregorenko.
You have guys like Mikko Rantanen and JT Compher, you know, some good young forwards coming up. So it's
still
not
too
soon
to pluck them into the lineup.
I don't think it's a rebuild situation. I mean, but, you know, you talk about guys like Beauchemin and Iginla. I mean, these guys are, they've got 1 or 2 years left in the NHL, right? So I don't know where this team is going. They're in the best division in hockey, right? So it's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs next year.
Well, there was more than one epic rant this week. Next up, I think this is almost a weekly thing with Todd McClellan now, because we did this on the Saturday show, the 6 a.m. start. We had a Todd McClellan rant segment. Here's the latest from the Edmonton Oilers' disgruntled head coach.
After that crap, damn important that there's an effort. Forget about the win and the loss, but just the effort. That's freaking embarrassing. Well, unfortunately, we have another Players Association Day. You know, they took it today. I guess they get back-to-back days, but we'll work on Monday.
That's my favorite part of the line. They took it today, an unfortunate Players Association Day. I mean, Todd McClellan is... you can hear him. He's at his wit's end with this disaster of a
season,
team.
Drew.
I know. I mean, just a disaster of a year in Edmonton and another disastrous performance, losing 5-0 on home ice to your biggest rival, Calgary Flames.
See,
although
to me, he's calling out his team there, which is more acceptable than calling out your one player.
Sure.
And when you're calling out your team like that, I think Patrick Walls was more the heat in the moment. That was more frustration, but planned to a point. He doesn't have their ear in the room. And I don't think he's as worried about it because he'll be there for a while. It's a bunch of those guys who are going to be shipped out. Like, it's going to be a big offseason for Edmonton. And Peter Chiarelli didn't do a particularly great job. I think he's very qualified. I don't think he did a particularly good job this past offseason.
No.
But he has built a winner before. And you're going to see some moves. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, because you have the GM coming in and hiring the coach, and you have Bob Nicholson, you have the new arena, there's going to be change. And Todd McClellan wouldn't talk like this. Because he took a while to get like this with San Jose, and I realized the team was way better. But he didn't. He started calling out his guys and kind of laying on the line near the end of his tenure there. And you could see he was saying, enough's enough. You know, you guys got to step up. In Edmonton, he's doing it right away, and so you can see what he feels about this squad.
Good for Todd McClellan. I mean, if you watch that game, the highlights of that game, and when a team loses 5-0, and, you know, as far as Todd McClellan goes, Richie, I mean, this guy had the San Jose Sharks in the playoffs year after year after year. Speaking of knowing how to win, San Jose might not have won the Stanley Cup, but year after year, they were in the playoffs. And I've always been a huge fan, I know Richie is too, of Todd McClellan. And I agree, Rich. I think there are going to be changes in Edmonton. But again, that type of performance, I don't care if they're out of the playoffs and fans want them to tank. I mean, there's still a chance, guys, even if Edmonton finishes last place, that they're not getting the first overall pick. Talk to Buffalo about that. Sure. So you still got to go out
justice
there.
In the world.
These guys are professionals. They are born and bred to win hockey games. Well, those that play hockey, obviously. But I mean, that type of performance, I can understand why McClellan was not happy.
Well, Calgary just got annihilated on Wednesday against Anaheim. Like, Calgary's not – they have not had a good year. They're not – I don't think they're really – as bad as the season they've had, and certainly they'll address goaltending in the offseason, but they're not losing 5-0 in Calgary is quite a feat, put it that way.
On home ice.
I was just going to throw in, Drew, quickly here before we go to break.
In Mexico City, for God's sake.
I think McClellan, Richie, was also saying, like, I'm here to stay. Like, this isn't, I'm not going
that's
anywhere.
Fair. That's fair.
I'm going to be here for this rebuild. You know, Connor McDavid is obviously going to be here. Like, who else wants to be here for this? Like, Yakupov, do you want to be here for this?
Well, we know he doesn't want to be there.
Well,
that one we know.
But it's the other guys.
Some of the other guys. You know, Taylor Hall. Eberle.
Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, all of them.
He's talking to those guys.
I didn't see it, but apparently Kelly Rudy destroyed Jordan Eberle on the game broadcast on Saturday night.
I didn't see it either, Drew. Well, Saturday night. I'm trying to remember. But was there a Jets game Saturday night?
No, you were out for Goldie's birthday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Buddy's birthday. I don't even know. So many games, I don't even know where I was. Anyhow.
Richie's such a socialite.
No, but if back to that for a second. I mean, we know Yakupov's demanded a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Eberle's been out there. I mean, they're listening on Eberle. So you wonder then, are they listening? And we know they offered Nugent Hopkins for Seth Jones. So they've offered Nugent Hopkins. Pretty sure Eberle's been listening on him at least. We know Yakupov has demanded a trade. We've been told Yakupov's demanded a trade.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have three guys, which you kind of have an idea around there. And then Taylor Hall is the other one you haven't really heard something about, but there's rumblings. So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out who's going to be, you know, which of the core is going to be moved, put it that way.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Nazem Kadri and his 4-game suspension
for cross-checking Luke Glendening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Legal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty to 8 here on NHL This Week on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Yeah, shout out to Frank and Mauro Zappia because it's now getting a little bit nicer out. It's barbecue season. Frank's starting to tweet the meat.
Have you learned since Saturday how to pronounce where their cottage is?
Yeah, Ponyma. Oh, no, Panima.
Seriously, you weren't joking when you did that there?
Which is the right one again?
Oh, for God's sakes. Richard, will you deal with him, please?
It's Panima.
He's smiling. He's good right now. Okay. He's good.
I don't want to give short shrift to Jack Capuano, New York Islanders head coach, because he also had a pretty good rant this week regarding
some nice rants this week.
Yeah, it was a good week for coaching rants. I'll give you the quote from Jack Capuano after the Islanders, who've lost 8 of their last 13 games. Quote, "We need Ryan Strome to be better. We need Brock Nelson to be better. We need Josh Bailey to be better. We need guys to be better if we're going to have any chance at all. They see it. It's black and white. The video doesn't lie. It doesn't come down to X's and O's. It doesn't come down to systems. It comes to how hard you want to compete. We've struggled with a few guys for sure about their compete level and their work ethic. It has to be better. There's no doubt that those guys, they have to figure it out at some point. The guys mentioned need to pick their bleep up and start playing." So that's Jack Capuano, New York Islanders head coach, calling out his team. They've responded tonight up 4-1 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I guess good for the Islanders that they're responding to Capuano.
Yeah, there's a lot of effect on the standings tonight's scores. We'll go over that in a little bit, Drew. But yeah, you know what? You're seeing this a little bit more. Like these young players getting called out by the coaches, and you want it to be behind closed doors. And that's why I think you're getting put in a bad position. But you wonder here how many times they've said it behind closed doors.
Yeah, they've tried to keep it in house for a while, and the message hasn't come through.
Still, usually want to keep it closed doors, but you have to wonder. And what guys like this, they have been healthy scratched, and he's calling out young players. I mean, Ryan Strome has had a disappointing year. Mm-hmm. Brock Nelson, Josh Bailey. You're talking about guys who are talented players. I mean, Strome is the most talented of that group. Then it would go Nelson. Then it would go Bailey. But guys who they need to score. They need support for Tavares, especially with the Hamonic injury. You're going to have to take pressure off your defense by creating offense and capitalizing on opportunities, sustaining offensive zone pressure. So interesting that he comes out right before the end of the season here. And you look at it, guys, and the Islanders, I'll get into that a bit now. The Islanders 2 points behind the Rangers for third place. Now, again, that would land you Pittsburgh instead of Florida, but 2 points behind the Rangers. The mm-hmm. Rangers are also winning tonight, yes. And Florida's also winning, and Tampa's losing.
Islanders are up 4-1 on the Lightning, as I mentioned. The mm-hmm. Rangers are up 3-1 on the Blue Jackets, so you'd expect that the Rangers will still be 2 points up on the Islanders at night's end. The Islanders with a game in hand, which actually won't be made up until the Sunday following when the season was supposed to end. The Islanders and the Flyers play next Sunday, a makeup game for when they had a snowstorm earlier in the season.
This Sunday, though.
This coming Sunday. Yeah. What is that? The 9th?
I guess technically that's next Sunday, but it's this Sunday.
The next Sunday.
So
that would be two Sundays from now otherwise.
Florida also, if they win and Tampa loses, is 4 points up on Tampa with 3 games left.
Yeah, that's Richie, and you make some good points there because I think what Jackie Capuano was doing here. By the way, I have all the respect for Jack Capuano. I think he does a great job there. You mentioned some of the guys that have had disappointing seasons. There's several on the Islanders, mm-hmm. and I think he's giving them a bit of a kick in the pants there, and he's saying, okay, guys, like, We have a chance here to pass the Rangers, and if we want to have any shot of not only getting out of the first round but going far in the playoffs here, we've got to step it up, and it's going to take a team effort. Like John Tavares, even though he might be one of the best forwards in the league, he can't score every time he's on the ice, right? Yeah. And you know, Travis Hamonic's going to miss the playoffs again this year, which is really unfortunate.
It appears as though that's the case.
Right. He's at least going to miss the rest of the regular season and sometime in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So, and this Islanders team, to me, you know, the goaltending is obviously the biggest issue that I have going in without healthy, two strong healthy goaltenders. Now you only have one healthy goaltender with Berube going down.
Yeah, and Thomas Greiss hasn't been very good.
But they haven't made any roster changes.
That's a good point.
And if the Hamonic injury is here, you're basically going with the exact same roster you had last year in the playoffs.
Right. And you
need internal improvement from young players.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because what other team in the West did the same thing this past offseason? The Minnesota Wild. All the Minnesota Wild did was bring in Mike Riley. It's the exact same roster. And I think both the Wild and the Islanders have taken a step back. I mean, the Islanders are probably going to finish with 96 or 97 points, but they've been a pretty mediocre team in the second half of the season. They started off a lot better than they finished here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tavares is instead of being around 80 or 90 points, he's at 60 points. And the other players haven't picked up the slack. And so I look at the Islanders as kind of limping into the playoffs here, and you know they might be responding, you know, early on tonight here, Drew, as we, you know, check the out of town scoreboard. But I don't know, this Islanders team, they've got a lot of depth in it, but you take Hamonic out of there, he's an excellent shutdown defenseman. Yep. You've still got Letty and Boychuk, but that means, you know, guys like Brian Strait and Thomas Hickey are going to have to pick up the slack. They don't have that depth there anymore.
Yeah, end of second period now, the Lightning score with 7 seconds to go. It's now a 4-2 Islanders lead over the Lightning, still in hand, so you'd expect they, you know, if they were to lose, to give up a 3-goal lead at home ice, I think Jack Capuano's comments would be even more interesting.
Yes.
Tomorrow or whenever postgame occurs. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll spend one final segment. We'll look at that Nazem Kadri suspension. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. We get in almost
every night. NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve.
One final segment for this Monday evening here on TSN 1290. We'll, of course, be back Saturday morning, 9 a.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And then a programming note, next Tuesday, the season finale of NHL This Week, alongside our NHL playoff preview show. So next Tuesday, join us here on NHL This Week as we go series by series, previewing everything, getting you set for the playoffs, which begin the next night on Wednesday.
Better days.
Better days, indeed, for all those teams that will make it into the playoffs. Better days for Luke Glendening of the Detroit Red Wings after Nazem Kadri tried to take his head off with a cross check in front of the net in their game on Saturday night. Kadri's done for the year as he gets a 4-game suspension. Your thoughts on 4 games for Kadri for the hit? Your thought, you know, statistically, this has been Kadri's best year, but your thoughts on Kadri's year in general?
He's had a good, productive year. I don't know issue with his year. In terms of the hit, one thing, you know, we'll break it down here, but one of the similarities I saw with the Keith hit and with the Keith stick swinging and this, basically stick swinging too, just with two hands, is both players were angry from what something of that happened.
They were retaliating. The
retaliation penalties. And if you watch the Kadri one here, he gets mad. I think he thinks that Glendening might have slew-footed him. And he gets up, and he is angry. And he basically blindsides him with a cross-check. And the problem you have is the difference. You could say Keith's is more severe. You cause more trouble swinging your stick like that, or do you cause more trouble with two hands on your stick? I don't know. But I can say this. At least afterwards, Keith came out with publicly a little bit more remorseful than Kadri has. Now, Leafs fans are probably ecstatic because he's not going to play, and he's a good player, and it's going to help him get to the bottom of the
lose even more
lottery. But, you know, in terms of a safety thing, you know, you hear a ton about concussions, rightfully so. And there's always a discussion about fighting. Something like this.
More likely to cause a concussion than a fight necessarily
is. You would think. And never mind, I think, well, concussions, fighting accounts for 5-10% of concussions, which is still, it's still significant because concussions are significant. But if you look at it, Kadri, if I'm recalling correctly, didn't have his helmet on when he does this. His helmet gets pushed off.
Now, there was a puck battle between the two of them.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And there's somebody else involved there, too. But when he cross-checks, I mean, it's possible Glendening goes back at him if he doesn't have respect, and Kadri slams his head on the ice. I mean, there's just so much here to take issue with.
Sure.
You just think that Nazem Kadri has to mature to a point where he doesn't do things like this because he's talented enough not to. I mean, we know he's arrogant and all that, but there's a lot of good players who are arrogant. He just got to – he's and it's a tough place to mature, Toronto, and he's only been in Toronto, and it hasn't been the best environment. He would certainly benefit from a better player or two in front of him because I don't think he's A, not good enough to be the best player in that squad forward-wise in general, and I don't think he's mature enough and a leader capable of handling the pressure that he faces in Toronto.
Ezzy, before I let you jump in, I should mention, of course, that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All week at Rumors, some great performances in conjunction with the Winnipeg Comedy Festival. And in case you missed the announcement from Saturday's show, Marlon Wayans, two new shows just added coming up April 14th through 17th. All the first six shows all sold out. Two new shows just added. Get your tickets, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Yeah, Drew, on the Nazem Kadri suspension, I actually like Nazem Kadri as a player, and, you know, Richie mentioned he's having a great year. This was an extremely dirty play.
Yeah, I mean,
I realized they were having a little scrum there, but Luke Glendening goes, skates in front of the net. You know, for those who haven't watched, he skates in front of the net, and, you know, he's, you know, looking for, you know, to tip a shot maybe. He's not even looking at the play. And what's really troubling about what Nazem Kadri does is he's not even looking at the play. He has the attention the entire time of going to cross-check him. Kind of reminds you a little bit of when Marty McSorley was chasing Donald Brashear down the ice or when Bertuzzi was doing. I mean, this was a very dirty play. And Glendening, I mean, you two-hand cross-check a guy in the head, and it's fortunate that Luke Glendening, you know, didn't suffer a serious injury. I'm sure they looked at him after the game because of that. And Kadri's had a bit of a rough year, too. If you remember, he's been fined now three times this year for diving.
He was fined last Friday for diving. Here was his quote after the fine came out. He was unrepentant. Quote, "I think you can make a penalty more obvious, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still a penalty. Diving and making something a little more obvious are two different things."
Well, you know, Kadri, you know, had an excellent junior career in the OHL, and he was a good, you know, member of the Team Canada, if you remember, that won gold at the World Juniors. I think it's up to Nazem Kadri how good of an NHLer he wants to be. He's got a lot of natural skill. I mean, and he knows that. But, you know,
he thinks he knows everything. I mean, that's the problem.
I mean, this type of stuff, I mean, he cross-checks Luke Glendening in the head. Luke Glendening, by the way, is an underrated defensive forward. And, you know, you can really seriously injure a guy. And now you've been suspended multiple times. You've already got the eye of the NHL with this diving business. So, I mean, he's got to get his act together. And I think we've been saying this now for four years. I mean, he's 24 years old now. He's not a rookie in the NHL. And, you know, you hope that, you know, he cuts that stuff out of his game. Because at the end of the day, he can put the puck in the net.
Like, if he sucker punches him, what's the reaction?
Outrage? Well, it's Ty Domi on – who was Ty Domi on?
Well, Scott Niedermeyer. Which one was it? I think he had two of them. But
yeah.
Scott Niedermeyer was one. But if you – but if he
– Ulf Samuelson?
Yeah, that's the one I was referring to.
And people were more upset about the Samuelson – the Niedermeyer one, because Samuelson was a dirty player, took out players' knees. But if you think about it, though, because, you know, what – again, I don't know the answer to this, but what has more impact? Well, what's scarier for what causes a concussion? More so than the other. I don't know. They're both bad. But I'm saying, like, would he get 20 games if he because basically blindsides him here. I know they had a puck battle, but Glendening goes back in front of the net.
Yeah.
And he comes and cross-checks him in the head. I know, and he says it kind of rolled up the shoulder. Again,
Richie,
he
could have got more than four games here. I mean, this type
Duncan Keith could have got more. Should have. We know. We all agree, I think, that these guys should be getting more. This is the problem with you have the concussions and all this talk, and you get 4 and 6 games. I mean...
Yeah. The talk is, I mean, you know, they go through the lip service, and then, you know, the proof is
but
in
the... PA is part of this too, Drew.
Of course the PA is a huge problem. I'm not letting the PA off the hook. The PA is almost is just as culpable as the players are, or as the you know, the NHL
is. Management, ownership. Yeah. Management, ownership, yeah.
I mean, you know, what did you think about Mike Babcock's comments? Quote, you've got to command your fair share of the ice if you're going to play hard. You can't cross-check people in the head. You're allowed to cross-check them in the meat of the arm, though. This is, you know, Babcock claiming at first he thought that it, you know, it, he was going for the arm and that it sort of, it, you know, it rid up the you know, the stick went up and caught Glendening accidentally.
I don't know if I agree with that. You got to have control of your stick either way.
Yeah, and what is Mike Babcock really going to say? I mean, Kadri's suspended for 4 games. It was a dirty play. I mean, he's sticking up for his player a little bit, but he's also saying that you can't do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Nazem Kadri's got to learn to not do these types of things. And, I mean, next time he gets suspended, it's going to be even more because now he's a double repeat offender, right?
Yeah.
But at least I don't know if he's spoke to Luke Glendening, but, I mean, you have Keith calling Charlie Coyle at least. And
yeah.
Again, demonstrating some remorse. Keith's history is worse, really, than Kadri's is in terms of the stick swing and such. But he's also way more accomplished and way more respected by opposing players.
And Duncan Keith, we all know that he's one of the best defensemen, right? But I agree, Richie's right. I mean, similar to Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger is one of the best defensemen of all time. Chris Pronger was a mean SOB in front of the net. Oh, he'd cross-check you in the back of the neck if he could.
Sure.
And he got away with it a lot of the time. So, I mean, Duncan Keith has got to sit on the sidelines now. He's got to miss a playoff game.
I think
he's got to learn his lesson.
Some players in the NHL will accept that if the player, you know, is the caliber of Pronger, the caliber of Duncan Keith. When you're Nazem Kadri and, you know, you think you're that good, but the reality is you've never actually done anything on the ice to deserve to think you're that good. I think the league looks upon it differently, and the players in the league look upon it differently. That's it for this Monday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to Stephen Wino of the Associated Press and Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. Big props to producer Eric doing a great job. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show every Saturday. And join Drew, Richard, and Ezra for NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve next week on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.